Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and of course, I'm joined by none other than one of the hardest working women in the LPGA profession, that's Cindy Miller. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you, Ted. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you, Cindy. As always, it's always a pleasure to work with you. And just as I said, you're one of the hardest working women in golf, and we just appreciate all the great things that you do, not only in the game itself, but helping a lot of great people out there learning how to play golf, just like you and I. Just before we have our guest, of course, she'll be coming joining us here in a few minutes. Let me just remind everybody, of course, we're live every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, unless we indicate otherwise. And you can follow us at blogtalkradio.com. Just go up into the search key and type Women of Golf, and that'll take you directly to the homepage. And you can check the live show out on the Tuesday mornings. And if you've missed any of the programs, you can actually go scroll down a little bit on the page, and you'll see the on-demand section. So if any shows that you happen to miss, especially some of the earlier programs where Cindy talked about a series that we did, Own Your Game, we went through that. I think it was about 12 episodes of that, around that, and some great insight from Cindy Miller. So you want to make sure you check that out. Don't forget, anytime during the live broadcast, if you want to call into the program or speak to Cindy and I, you can do so at area code 347-945-5855. Or you can email any questions you want to womenofgolf@gmail.com or any comments you may have about the program. We always love to hear from you. And you can also reach Cindy at cindy@cindymillergolf.com. Cindy, of course, we got a really great guest coming on the show, another LPGA professional, Rosie Jones, which I know you know very well. But before we get her, we're just going to wait a few minutes for her to come online here. Cindy, I thought I would ask you maybe if you could talk about just a couple of some of the memorable moments, if you will, of 2014.
Oh, wow.
Get you right out of the gate.
Yeah. Hi, how are you? You know what I've done this year? I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've learned a lot. I've gotten some extra certifications. I went to the Golf Psych Certified. I'm getting certified in judgment and process and how people make decisions. I had the opportunity to speak at the Microsoft World Partner Conference, and that was awesome. I did two sessions, The Privilege of Pressure and The Why Behind What Motivates You. So what motivates people to action, which was awesome. I had the opportunity to speak at the EWGA National Leadership Conference, mm-hmm. and I did a session called Improve Your Team from the Inside Out. And I also did the Women's National Leadership Forum, and I did two sessions, Improve Your Team from the Inside Out and Golf 101 for Executives. So I did an awful lot of speaking engagements. And I really enjoyed it, and I think I learned, and I helped some other people learn some good things.
Well, and I think that's really, you know, that's really key. I think when you as a speaker, obviously you're there to instill some wisdom, if you will, onto the listeners. But I think if you come away learning something yourself, then I think it's certainly a successful venture. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, definitely.
Now, I know you had a pretty busy playing schedule this year as well and had a lot of great tournaments, Nat. What's coming up for 2015? What have you got going there?
Well, a couple of things I can't tell you about yet.
Oh, okay, all right.
Really, really good. And to be honest with you, I really didn't play that much this year. Playing-wise, I was kind of yucky. I didn't play very well. I didn't play very much. And I'm really trying to work on my game a little bit. I think we're going to buy a flight scope here. We were just testing one out. I went to the LPGA Regional Conference and learned all kinds of cool things about flight scope and how I can help not only myself but all of our junior students. They have combines that you can play these games and you can see how far you are from the hole from, you know, 250 yards out. And so I think we're going to do that. So I'm going to learn, and I'm going to help my kids get better. We can send the numbers, the smash back to the launch angle, the club speed, the ball speed, all that stuff. So it's really pretty cool.
It's interesting, you know, with really a lot of the technology that's come out in the last few years. I mean, obviously it has to be like anything, any technology has to be put in perspective, and it can't really override the sort of, basic understandings and things. But, I mean, it certainly does help. There's a lot of people out there that are using things like Flight Scope and some of the other technology that's been out there, and it certainly has helped. Really, I think it's a great tool to educate the instructors as well as the players, and helping them assess their students, of course, and obviously the players on the tours use a lot of this equipment to ascertain some of the numbers, if you will, that they need to go by. So obviously,
well,
very excited.
Here's why, again, there's two things here. And while I was listening to the presentation at the LPGA conference, I thought to myself, well, why would I get this? Because we really don't fit people with clubs. We do, but we don't fit them to that extent. They have a track man in the store where we teach, and they're the ones that sell the clubs. So I refer people to them. But when he started talking about the combine, you can play games on this computer. I don't know if you've ever been to a Topgolf, but it registers how close you are to the target. Now, that's a whole different story. When you live in Buffalo, New York, and you're in a dome for 6 months, and, you know, the snow is outside, if I can teach kids how to better, you know, prepare, plan, and produce a golf shot, then and see the results of that, that's a big deal. So that would be why, you know, we're going to do this. Not so much of, you know, what are your numbers? Your numbers are fine, but you still have to go play golf.
Right. And let me ask you a question, because you just said something that kind of raised a thought here, because obviously I'm familiar, being from Canada, of course, we have some domes up there and around the Toronto area and beyond, but I know as well as you, obviously, the distance is limited. You know, what you can hit, you can't really hit. I mean, you can certainly hit full shots, but obviously there's limitations on how far you're going to be able to track it. How do you sort of work with that, knowing that there is a certain limitation? Up until now, obviously, the technology is going to kick in and help a little bit more, but how do you sort of help gauge the success of because you're obviously on your shorter irons, you're going to see a more true ball flight, but when you get into some of your longer clubs, like a driver, you know, there's going to come a point in time where it's going to hit the other side or what have you. So how do you sort of work with that sort of limitation?
You can definitely see it. We've got our dome's 100 yards long. So you can see what it's doing for 100 yards, which is long enough to know where it's going to go.
Sure.
The student can not only feel it, but we can see it, and we can see what their body's doing, and therefore we know what the club face is doing, and therefore we know where the ball's going to go.
Right.
Because the face, you know, tells the ball what to do. The dome has been way a lot better for us than, if you will, a cage where it only flies 10 or 15 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very, very high, so you can see, you know, a third of the flight if you hit it 300 yards for the driver. You can also stand on a corner, you know, you can stand on one end of the dome and hit crosswise and see it fly a lot further, probably 125 yards. So you can tell pretty much what it's doing. And not that many of our students hit it 300 yards, so.
No. No.
Although our son does,
Yeah, that's true,
My son on that flight scope and he was flying his 6-iron 210. I'm like, okay, go away.
Know. It makes you sick sometimes when you look at that. You know, I see as I'm getting a little bit older, my distance is getting a little shorter. So I'm trying to work on that as well. But Cindy, I see that Rosie's waiting alongside here with us. So let me just mention a couple things about our guest coming on here, and then we'll bring her on and talk to Rosie for a little while. For those of you that are just tuning into the broadcast, of course, our special guest today is Rosie Jones, an LPGA professional. And, of course, she's been playing in this game for a long, long time. She played on the LPGA for 25 years and was a winner of 13 LPGA titles. She also played on 7 U.S. Solheim Cup teams and was a captain in 2011 of the team. She currently ranks number 14 on all-time career LPGA money list. And in the Hall of Fame inductions was in 2006 for the Georgia Golf Hall of Fame, 2000 in the Albuquerque, New Mexico Sports Hall of Fame, and the 94 Ohio State Buckeyes Varsity Hall of Fame. So certainly a very well-accomplished player. She retired, of course, officially from the LPGA in 2006, but then hopped on over to the Legends Tour around the same time and, of course, won another 7 Legend Tour titles. So certainly a great repertoire, if you will, in the Rosie Jones camp. And so let's bring her on, Cindy. Let's welcome Rosie Jones. Rosie, welcome to the Women of Golf.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us.
We're doing
us.
Great. I had
Good.
To.
Glad
you had
to
you,
be here.
Rosie, you had so many accomplishments and so many things in your camp that I unfortunately wasn't able to read them all. It would have taken up most of the hour of the show, so I had to cut it short a little bit.
No,
she's
definitely one of my heroes. Sorry about that. I just had to, you're definitely one of my heroes. She knows that because I stalk her when I get done playing and go out and watch her. Because I just absolutely admire her.
Cindy, I admire you too. And, you know, you are, I can, you know, if I could only teach the golf swing like you do, you know, I would be a better, well-rounded player myself. And I tell you what, I appreciate all those accolades and the attention that you're giving me. But, you know, it's a pleasure and really an honor to be on your show today.
Well, we appreciate having you, and thank you for joining us. Cindy, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. One of the main reasons I admire you is for your diligence and your resilience and your tenacity and your ability to play within yourself and not allow committee members to try to make you into somebody you're not. And I believe in the world of golf, and I see it every day with parents and coaches and sisters and brothers and mothers and fathers and husbands and wives trying to change people. Can you tell us how hard or difficult it might have been for you to stick with you being the best Rosie you can be?
Well, you know what? That's a complicated question because I think you evolve into the player that you are. And I was always, you know, a pretty good player as far as my short game went. I never hit the ball a long way. So when the golf courses started getting fairly longer, in the mid-90s and then early 2000s, you know, they started really stretching out the golf course. It was players like myself, not myself, walking into the, you know, officials' trailer saying, hey, you know, you guys are stretching out these golf courses too long. You know, for me, I felt like if I could play these longer golf courses and still beat better players, then it was better for me because my short game was really good. You know, if I could still get it up around the green and get it up and down, still making birdies, you know, when I had those opportunities on the par fives and shorter par fours, par threes, then that was going to make me a tougher player in the long run. And that's basically what happened. And then when the hybrids came out and the 9 woods and 7 woods took place with the 3 irons and the 4 irons, then I was able to really, you know, zone in on those clubs and really kind of, you know, bug those other players because I was knocking those clubs in closer than they were hitting their 8 irons. And that was, you know, that was a lot of fun. But those, I mean, I loved when, you know, a longer player would turn around and look at me and go, how the heck did she just do that? But, you know, when the golf courses started getting longer, I just started working harder on those clubs. I didn't complain about, you know, how hard the golf courses were getting. I just tried to keep working on the things that were really good about me, and which was my short game, my putting, keeping it in the fairway, always keeping it in play, and, you know, just working on, you know, the ego of my game, which was, you know, course management and and just stay in control of my golf ball.
That's awesome.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, so essentially, Rosie, what you did is you learned to adapt your game to the situation, to the course conditions.
Exactly. And every single week, of course, it's different because, you know, it may be a really long golf course that is dry and running hard, and or it might be a really short golf course, which is, really wet and long grass and wet, rough and tree lined. And, those kind of golf courses, both of those that I just mentioned, were really great for me because most of the players were hitting it off the tee into the rough behind a tree or, down the fairway, through the fairway because the fairways were running hard. Because I could really be that great with my driver, I could take a little bit more risk than some of the other longer players.
Right. Cindy, go ahead.
And what about your golf swing? How many people made comments to you that, oh, you're too flat, you're turning around yourself too much, you know, did you get a lot of that or not really?
Yeah, I did. And when I looked at my swing on TV, I was like, wow, I am really flat, I didn't realize I was that flat in my backswing. And I think a lot of that was due because I was having a lot of neck issues in the last half of my golf career. And I wasn't really able to get the flexibility that I wanted out of my left shoulder and be able to get the club up a little bit higher. And I think the last 4 or 5 years of my playing on the LPGA, I really, really worked too hard on getting my club up higher, and I was kind of going at it all wrong. I screwed up my my takeaway. My hands at the top were in a bad position, and so for the last couple of years now, I've been trying to repair that that mistake and come back with a little stronger hit. And, get my hands up maybe a little bit higher. But, yeah, I was flat, and people, kept telling me that, but it was working for me because it was so repetitive, and I was, I was so in the zone with it that, when I did try to change it, I got a little bit better, got a little bit better ball flight, but it was really hard for me to do it.
So it has to be repeatable.
Yeah, and when you're playing golf every single day, as many hours as I was when I was on the LPGA and hitting that many balls, you're grooving it. And my timing was perfect, but there was a lot of days out there that I was not perfect and my timing was bad. I was scraping the ball around. But the good thing about my game was that even if I wasn't hitting it that great, I could still compete. I was still, shooting par or a couple under, kind of keep myself in the running. But if I was on it, then I was shooting, I could go for those flags a little bit more. I could, trust my swing a little bit to do a little bit more, get a little bit better shots out of it and go for the pin a little bit more. But, shoot 5 or 6 under. But there's days when I'm like, where the heck did my golf swing go? Because I walk up to the tee box and, I have no idea how I'm going to hit it today. After shooting 5 or 6 under the day before.
Yeah, I think it's a great testament. And the reason I'm asking you these questions is because all of us have these issues. And so I have a saying that I tell my students, he or she who misses it best without getting ticked off wins. I mean, they look at me like they're supposed to hit it perfect. And I say, well, nobody hits it perfect. But if you can miss it better and get away with it and not get so ticked off, then, you realize that it's those who scrape it around and are able to score that survive the longest, and you are absolutely a great example of that, and that's one of the reasons why I look up to you so highly, and I always watch you because I'm like, wow, I need to be just like her when I grow up. Will I ever grow up?
Thanks, Cindy. You know what it is? You have to kind of, when I say play within your ego, because that's a big thing out there for any player. Sure, we all want to be able to hit it, 185 over the water and fade it into that back right flag, over the bunker. But you know, a lot of us are just aiming towards the front left of the green and making sure we play the shot that we know that we can hit. And, you know, and that's the way that I had to play. It, depending on how you feel each day or what, how you feel during that part of the day, because in the mornings I might be, you know, not as strong as later in the round or in the afternoon. You know, there was some mornings when I felt really good but get tired in the afternoon. So you have to kind of know yourself and know what your limits are at any given time of a golf game.
Cindy, if I can just ask a, sort of a follow-up on that. Rosie, I wanted to ask you, obviously during your tournament play, I'm sure you've had a few moments along the way. Was there ever a time when you hit really such a bad shot and said to yourself, what the heck was that? And if so, how did you overcome it and how, you know, were you able to regroup from that?
I'm sure there was, I'm sure there was a lot of times when that happened, but I think right off hand, I remember playing in the major out at the Nabisco, the Dinosaur we called it back then, in Mission Hills, Palm Springs, coming along, and all of a sudden I just rope duck hook shot off the ninth tee box. And I'm deep in the woods. I punch it out, and then I get my 3-wood out and do it again, you know. And I'm looking at my caddy like, what the heck is that, and where is that coming from? And really, you kind of go into a little bit of a panic mode inside your brain.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, I've done a lot of training with my mental voice, I guess you want to call it, and you have to really, you know, listen to how your voice is talking to you, whether if it's in a panic mode or if it's in an anger mode or if it's in a relaxed, you know, positive mode. I mean, those are all different things that you got to listen to, and for me, I'm like, you know, let's go back. What was the last key thought that I was thinking about? What did I change? Was it a grip move or was it, you know, something in my stance? Was it something that, you know, in, you know, the way I took it back? What was the last thing that I was thinking about? Let's try to delete it and start, you know, looking and visualizing a different ball flight. So that's basically what you kind of have to do, is go to the other side of the spectrum and say,
right,
you know, let me delete that and start, you know, working on a little bit of a fade here or a little cut for the next couple shots and just kind of get and try to get rid of that. But I mean, unless you do it 3, 4, 5 times in a row, you know, that then you start going into panic.
Right. Well, and that just goes to show that, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, as we see things on TV, of course, we hear about a few bad shots here and there from the professionals, but you really don't see a lot of that because of some very creative editing and so forth. But, you know, I don't think the average person out there really understands that professionals have bad days too and hit bad shots. I think they just assume that they're hitting them, you know, striking them pure every time, and that's just obviously not the case. And it's interesting to see how, you know, somebody in your position would handle that, and I think that's a give great insight to some of the amateurs that are tuning in today.
Right, yeah. I mean, we definitely do, you know, hit bad shots. And I think what's, you know, kind of interesting now is, like, when I go out and play with different people and they know that they're playing with Rosie Jones, who won 13, you know, golf tournaments on the LPGA and 7 on the Legends Tour, you know, they have these great expectations that, you know, they're going to see, like, every shot's going to be so perfect and
right,
so solid. And you know, and basically, I mean, you're hitting good shots, but at the end of the day, and you're a couple under, and they're 7 over, and they're looking at you going, wow, that was pretty cool, and I didn't, you know, and I wasn't that great, you know, but,
right,
but I got the ball around and shot 2 under. So they see kind of, you know, that kind of mediocrity, but at the same time, it was pretty good golf.
Right, exactly. And it gives a sort of a human element to you as well. I think that, you know, people realize that you're going to have some difficulties as well, but at the same time, you've got the capacity to sort of put it all together. Cindy, go ahead. I know you had some things that you wanted to follow up with.
Rosie, tell us about the Founders Film. I know you're doing a lot of other great things, but I want to start with the Founders Film, and then we'll do the Judson, and then we'll do the Golf Getaways. But tell us about the Founders Film and what can we do to help you make that happen.
Well, the Founders Film is a film about the 13 founders of the LPGA. And I got to know the film crew here in Atlanta as they sent me an email wanting to put together, you know, a kind of a cocktail party to get more exposure for funding for the event and for the film, because they're on a deadline and they're trying to raise the money to help finish the film, actually. And they're doing most of the filming right here in Atlanta. As a matter of fact, they did a whole set yesterday out of Capital City right here in Buckhead. And then in a couple, well, we were postponed. I was going to help them do some filming at one of my golf courses at Sutton Down Creek. But that's been postponed till next spring. So basically, I got to know the director and a couple of the executive producers. And they've been able to recruit players like Kari Webb and Stacey Lewis on the LPGA and myself and a couple of the other local players around town to kind of help spread the word about the Founders Film and to get this story out there. So it's really kind of a great story of our founders, and I'm just trying to help them push along that and get it out there and get it finished.
And when do they expect to finish it?
Well, now, you know, they were hoping to get it out by the first of the year or early next spring, but they're still going to have a little bit of filming to do early next spring. And hopefully, I think they were shooting for the Founders Tournament out in Arizona, which happens early in March, I think, or mid-March, to have a finished product. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, they're a great passionate group of ladies that are putting this film together about 13 passionate women that really started the tour and to what we know it is today. And it's really a lot of fantastic stories in itself, you know, like Louise Suggs and Babe Zaharias and all these, you know, great players that came before us, Patty Berg, you know, it's really kind of amazing how they've taken it under their wing, and they're really, really passionate about making this movie and making it, you know, so that the world can see where the LPGA really started.
That's awesome.
Well, there's a website. Let me just say there's a website, thefoundersfilm.com, that people can go and donate money to the film making, and it is a 501(c) foundation that they have put together for a tax write-off. And also, you can follow Stacey Lewis in the last couple tournaments this year, and every birdie she makes, you can donate a certain amount of money for those birdies, and trying to intrigue the interest there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Good.
Well, now tell us about the Judson.
The Judson Collegiate and Legends Pro-Am Challenge is a tournament that I helped co-create and I host here in the Roswell area, just outside of Atlanta. It's a tournament that includes 30 Legends players from the LPGA and 60 collegiate players from around the country. And we, this year, we're changing the format around just a little bit, but basically it's a more of a mentoring and leadership opportunity to bridge that gap between the Legends players, you know, some of the greatest players that have ever played this game, and those younger players, the collegiate players who are going to be the history or who are going to be the future of the game. And we started with, you know, including the collegiate players into the Pro-Am to show them, you know, that part of the aspect of the entertainment value, the fundraising value of playing with the Legends players and raising money for charity. And we've also had, you know, a competition as well, and it gives the collegiate players an opportunity to play with some of the greatest players that have played the LPGA, players like Nancy Lopez, Laura Davies, Beth Daniels been to the tournament, Amy Alcott, Hollis Stacey, Pat Bradley, A lot of great players in between, you know, like Nancy Scranton, Val Skinner, all these players that have come in the last 3 years. We're into our fourth year now, and it's turned out to be a really fantastic golf tournament. And the whole thing has been built around the foundation of the Judson family. And the Judson family, unfortunately, lost their parents in an airplane crash as they were leaving a collegiate golf tournament where they were watching their daughter, Lauren Judson, play golf when she was a sophomore at Southern Miss University. And from that horrific accident, the family decided to start a golf tournament in honor of their parents, Jim and Beth Judson. And they came to me and asked if I could help at this event. And I told them I would love to bring the Legends Tour players in. Maybe we could help, you know, raise some money for their foundation and bring together, you know, this opportunity to mentor the young players, the college players. And we're doing exactly that. I mean, it's been such a fantastic experience for me. And I'm hoping for all of the Legends players and the collegiate players to come to our event. Like I said, we're into our fourth year this year and really looking forward to another great tournament.
Perfect. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really been a lot of fun. And if people can look at it, we're still looking for sponsors, of course. We need sponsors. We're at judsongolf.com to find out more about our event. This year we're playing the event late in June, and the last week of June at Country Club of Roswell in Roswell, Georgia.
Perfect.
Go ahead, Cindy.
How are you changing the format for this coming year?
Well,
didn't the college kids play with the tour players, the Legends Tour players?
We did, and they do. And we're not changing that part of the format. In the past, it's been a one-day pro-am and a one-day Legends tournament for a purse of $120,000. And within that day, each Legends Tour player would play with two collegiate players. And the collegiate players were playing a three-day stroke play event, a world-ranking amateur event. And the Legends Tour players are just playing the one day for the $120,000 purse. This year, because it is hard to raise enough money to run a tournament like that, the foundation has decided and are hoping we're still in the middle of changing this format, but changing it into a two-day pro-am, and the purse money will be distributed a little bit differently, but it's still adding the competition. The collegiate players will still be playing with the Legends Tour players, and there still will be a purse amount of money. It's just a matter about how we format the competition. But they still will be competing with each other, so which will be really fun.
That's awesome.
Now, Rosie, you've obviously go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, what I was going to just ask about with respect to some of the collegiate players, obviously you've had an opportunity in these last few years, being part of the Judson Pro-Am Challenge. You obviously see a lot of up-and-coming stars, in the making. What is your impression of some of the young college players now that you see? What do you see that you really like and think that they're going to bring to the tour?
Well, you know, what's really great is I love that age of the college players. They're still very they're kind of like deer in headlights, and whatever – you know, information and advice that you're giving them, they're just really soaking up, and they're just really hungry for that advice. I mean, there's so many days, you know, after we play golf that, you know, I'll see a couple Legends Tour players out there on the range with a player working on part of her swing or part of her putting stroke, and or just sitting at the corner talking about their experience on tour or what it was like to have to fire a caddy or find a manager or something like that. And so all of these, you know, great things that we're able to add to their experience leaving the Judson. I mean, they're so fresh and talented. They're, you know, it's just a lot of fun, you know, I played with Rachel Rahana from Ohio State the first year, and we were playing in the Pro-Am, and of course you can be a little, because we're playing like a scramble in the Pro-Am, you can be a little bit more aggressive with your tee shots and stuff like that. Well, she was looking at a whole different golf course than I was, because she could hit it so far. And wow. It was just really kind of great to see that. And just try to, you know, change your thinking and your strategy, because you had a player that could really do that. And she was just so humble and excited to be playing with me and to watch, you know, some of the things that I could do really well. And it was, you know, it's really great to see that type of player. They haven't, you know, they're still really hungry, still trying to, you know, they're thinking about turning pro. Some of them are thinking about, you know, going into the business world. And mm-hmm. that's the great thing about the Judson itself is actually we started a whole new branch of leadership workshop for young women in business connected with our golf tournament. And they're touching hundreds of women last year at the seminar that we started with young women in business, whether they're just leaving college and just getting into the business world, that don't really have this leadership opportunities or mentoring opportunities. We provided, you know, a whole half day of great speakers, women that have been very successful in business, come in and talk to them about how they're going to, you know, control their business life, you know, in the near future. So this whole, the whole Judson experience has been, you know, kind of evolving over the last 3 years. And it's more about how do we help these young women, whether they're going into golf or business, you know, go forward with a positive and, you know, confidence.
Right. Do you find, Rosie, that because they're, you know, golf now is a much more global game than it was, you know, say 20, 30 years ago. You know, the game has really opened up all around the globe. Do you find that it's a more difficult decision for some of the younger players now coming up on which direction to go? There's just so many opportunities available to them now that there maybe wasn't, 20 or 30 years ago. And how do you sort of help guide them into making that decision? I mean, obviously, ultimately, the decision's theirs. But, you know, is there some words that you sort of say to them and kind of, you know, move them along in any particular direction? Or how do you sort of handle something like that?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a really great question, because your first part of it is, yeah, I think it is really a lot more difficult for players to get onto the LPGA or to even look at the tour as an opportunity, opposed to when I was thinking about playing on tour. I was competing against mostly 90% other Americans trying to get on tour, where nowadays, you know, there's probably a 25% opportunity for players to get on tour because they're playing against so many other international players that are wanting to play the LPGA. So
right.
Given that, you know, people really do need to, I always say, follow your dream. And if your dream is to be a world-ranked golf player on tour, then I say follow your dream. But be realistic and be able to, you know, view your goals. I was huge in goal making from the time I was 12 years old until, you know, I stopped competing on the LPGA. That I every year and throughout the year, I was looking at my goals and making sure that I was, you know, setting, you know, good goals, achievable goals. And if I wasn't, you know, could I back them up and look and tear them apart a little bit and reach those smaller goals? And I think girls at the stage where they're coming out and they're thinking that if they want to turn professional, I mean, they have to look at their game realistically and their history of the game, their success in the game, and know whether that they have really reached their potential or
right.
can they or will they? You know, do they have the support to be able to do that? And, you know, I think that's a really tough question for a lot of girls coming out, because it really is tough and difficult. Even if you have a great game, you have to have the mentality to be out there and the stamina and the motivation and the support to be out there all the time and to make it.
Yeah, and the competition, as you said, is so fierce, not just here in the United States, but from so many local international players wanting to come to the LPGA, that the field is much larger. So, you know, as you said, it's a much smaller percentage of people that are actually going to even make it onto the LPGA now. So you certainly have to have something else to sort of follow along with. And I think education, of course, has really become in the forefront now for a lot of players, both on the men's side and the ladies' side. More of them now are I can remember back a few years ago, and I can't think of the young man's name off the top of my head, but I remember him sort of leaving school a little bit earlier to turn professional, and I think more of them now are finishing their education first before they make that transition.
Absolutely, and that was the trend. I mean, most of us stayed in school as long as we could. In my era, because to let our game mature a little bit and have some time before we, figured out our next move. But, there's going to be an occasional player like Brittany Lincecum or Morgan Pressel or, some of these other players that, Paula Kramer, that are going to skip going to college at a, disadvantage in a way, but at the same time, they're very strong. They're very, great amateurs that come out and they've been really successful on the LPGA. But on the other hand, they don't have that degree. If something was, if they were to get hurt or if they weren't successful, they would need something to back up on. And that was always my plan. And I think, a lot of players in college now are starting to think about that, because there's so many great fields in the game of golf now,
right?
More so for women than there were back, 25 years ago. And, mm-hmm. There's so many job opportunities available for women now in the golf industry. So, you're not just looking at playing professionally or teaching, there's sales and golf clubs and management positions and, golf course superintendent stuff, anything that travel, everything that is included with golf. So, and a lot of us are doing it right now, right, Cindy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And,
yeah.
And the other thing, our daughter, wasn't very good at golf, didn't play golf in college, but understands the game, and she's a, features producer at the Golf Channel. So there's all
right.
kinds of things, even if you're not that good at it. And an example, and I don't mean to sound it like, oh, she's not that good, but, Ashton, she's a great story. I know that you've helped her and mentored her, as have I, as have our daughter, Kelly.
Right.
And she can help change the world with her story, and she's thrilled to do
right.
it, and she's using golf as a vehicle to do that.
Exactly. Ashton Brown, representative of Riley's hospital up in Indianapolis, who, has survived cancer twice, and young 20-year-old kid, playing on the golf team up there. She's a great inspiration to so many people. And your daughter, great example. I don't even know why I didn't use that as far as TV goes, because, that's a huge avenue for young women to go into. And that's what's so great about our involvement with the Judson. I'm not going to toot our horn a little bit, but we've had a couple players that have come through the tournament and have interned for us. And now, one of them has gotten a great job with Jones Lang LaSalle, which is a huge, one of the biggest real estate companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in Atlanta, and another one has taken a job when she graduates from college, Golf Channel. Cindy will be working down there with Kelly. So, there's so many ways that we can help these young people, and I'm glad that we're being a part of it down here in Atlanta.
Cindy, just real quick before we get, I know that we want to give Rosie a moment to talk a little bit about her golf getaway business, but something sort of came to mind. Rosie, who was, if anybody, was there any sort of one person that you feel was a mentor to you in your golf? Oh, I think we, I think we lost her. She dropped her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think she, I think I don't know whether her phone died on her or not, but we'll try and I'm sure she'll call back here in a second. I'm not sure if she heard what I said anyways, but we'll just wait for a moment. But while we're waiting for her to call back, I know we want to give her a moment to, you know, to talk about her golf business and that. But, you know, what a great lady, really, certainly one of the ambassadors of golf, Rosie Jones. I know that you look up to her. You've mentioned that several times, you know, before and obviously this
She's
morning.
Awesome.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, just and what's really refreshing, I think, with the Legends players is how much they're willing to give back of themselves to the game and help mentor some of these younger up-and-coming stars. And who is your mentor, do you think, Cindy?
You know, Joanne Carner really helped me a lot. I used to stay in Joanne Carner's Airstream trailer in the winter, and I worked at in the pro shop at Palm Beach National because I needed to make enough money to pay the rent at the Airstream trailer and feed myself. And I would play golf with her, and I would just watch her hit balls, and we, you know, she would beat me like a drum every afternoon for money. And she was just so willing to help me. And we played two different games. I've always been, you know, I haven't hit the ball very far, and I've
right.
always tried to prove myself in my game. And I have the same type of game as Rosie. That's why I look up to her. But Joanne helped me a lot. I mean, she even came to our wedding in Silver Creek, New York. And Kathy Whitworth has helped me immensely. She's the wizard, in my opinion. I just love her to death. And so many of these women who have made their mark with the LPGA and really helped the LPGA become what it is right today, they are so willing to give back, and Rosie is a perfect example. I mean, with what she does with not only amateurs with her golf getaways, but with the kids who want to play golf and or want to go in business, and she did develop a leadership conference that went along with this Judson Intercollegiate Tournament. She's doing great, great things. I mean, we're all trying to give back. It's like, what do you want to be remembered for? Is it the tournament wins or how many lives you've affected? And I think that, you know, when they started, it was tournament wins, and now they realize, you know, what can I give back? And that's just such a refreshing thing.
Right, exactly. I see that she's back on, so let me bring Rosie back here. Rosie, welcome back. We lost you there for a few moments.
I'm sorry. You know what? I just gave you this big, long dissertation about who my mentors were, and I was like, are you there?
Yes.
So I don't know what happened.
Just as I asked the question, I realized that your call had been dropped, and I was thinking to myself maybe there was some sort of a connection problem. But anyways, Rosie, if you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience, unfortunately, we didn't get to hear that.
Well, you know what? What I was saying was, and then I caught the last part of what Cindy was saying, and some of the same players that she mentioned, Kathy Whitworth and Joanne Carner, have been huge mentors to me. Even though I didn't know that they were mentoring me at the time, there were so many times I'd walk up to Joanne Carner and ask her, you know, show me that shot again, you know, and I would bug the heck out of her, you know, even before we were going out on the golf course, you know, I'm like, I got 3 minutes before my tee time, show me that shot again, you know, but I've won tournaments with that shot, and Kathy Whitworth is a really good friend of mine. She has, you know, if I have a big question something that, you know, I can't talk with anybody else about, you know, she's always been there for me, and you know, to have players like that that you can talk to is really important, you know. But I also had, you know, teachers in college and high school, coaches that have, you know, if without them, I wouldn't be where I am right now. And now when I'm in the business and with our tournament with the Judson and stuff, I have friends that, you know, help me and are mentoring me in ways that, you know, I never imagined as a tour player and wish I had, you know, as a tour player. And like Cindy says, you know, giving back to the game and being able to, you know, let go of the tournament wins and
what you're doing as a player, and now what are you doing as a golf professional, as a person, you know, is really much more important. And I'm glad that, you know, I heard you say that, Cindy, because it's so true that as you know, players let go of those trophies and start to extend themselves a little bit further, it's just really great. And I'm so happy to be starting to do that myself.
So tell us a little bit about your golf getaway business and what can we do to help you? I know you've got a trip planned for the Solheim Cup next year. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Right. Thanks for asking. The Rosie Jones Golf Getaways, I started right as I retired from the LPGA. And what I wanted to do was take women who are passionate about playing golf, and now we'll take men, women, whoever, because there's so many fun people out there and fun places to go, to different destinations and play some great golf courses, have some great meals, get some great golf instruction on and off the golf course. And, we've been, 15, 16, 17 trips that we've done around the country and over to Scotland and Ireland. We just got back from Scotland, actually, about 3 weeks ago. And we had a fantastic trip over there and played four of the rotation British Open golf courses over there. So I got to have lunch at Glen Eagles right before they had the Ryder Cup. So we have a lot of fun, play a lot of golf, and drink a little beer. Just a little. but, you know, we do have a trip. Next year we do have a trip. When I started doing hosting trips over to the Solheim Cup, and when we have a domestic Solheim Cup, I do a big captain dinner with the captains, open to the public. You can buy a table or something. But this time, I have partnered up with women's golf travel that we can. They've got a great package, either 5 or 6 days. You can extend it to go to Oktoberfest, but it includes a fantastic hotel, golf during the stay over there in Germany, and tickets to the Solheim Cup. So I have a special package available, and of course, when I host a package over there, then I'm spending more time with our folks out there during the matches and in the pavilions and stuff like that, and you know, a little bit more access to the skin. Well, you can't get inside the rope, sorry. I can hardly get inside the rope, Cindy.
Well, but no, I know, but I mean, it's more insider information.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They get to hang out with you and learn more than they would if they went on their own.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and I've seen you do, like, walkabout before out there at different tournaments. I mean, we have some opportunities just like that where you can walk with walk with myself, and if there's more, need to, get another captain to do that. And so there's great opportunities to get a little bit closer to the action and find out more about, some of the intricate decisions that the captains are making and what my opinion would be on, some of the strategy that the captains are making and how to play and the matches are going down. So that's kind of a cool experience that we're kind of expanding this year, because now, not being a player or not being a captain, we have a little bit more time to, kind of embellish what the trip will be like and expand on that.
And how do people sign up?
Oh, well, you can go to my website at www.rosiejones.com and follow Solheim Cup events right from my front page. Click on that, and you'll find out all about the trips and then how to register.
Perfect.
And what's the size of the group? Is there a limit to how many you're looking for fill up? Or is it, okay. So the more the merrier.
That's the great thing. Yeah. See, that's the great thing. I mean, the more people we have, we're already planning on having
the whole group will be, you know, I mean, it could be for anywhere from 20 to 50 people, and you know, that's not very many, or even 150. We're hoping to get like 400 or 500 people to go on this trip, you know, and if we run out of one block of rooms at one hotel, we got another one all set up to,
right,
to go into. But, you know, the more people we have, the more we can embellish on what our experience will be and have, you know, private parties on the side and stuff like that. So,
oh, well, yeah, that sounds like fun.
So, well, the Solheim stuff is so awesome. If anybody, you know, out there listening has not been to a Solheim Cup, it's unbelievable. So much fun. The electricity and the buzz in the air on the golf course is so much fun to watch the players in person, and then to go back to the hotels, the host hotels. The craziness continues, and the buzz around the town. And Germany will be just as exciting. I mean, it's a destination that, you know, a lot of people want to go, just like Ireland was, you know, for my Solheim Cup when I was captain. You know, it's such a great place to go and visit, especially if you've never been there before.
Well, it
it's
sounds like it's going to be
a great time. Yeah, I went to Ireland when you were the captain and brought a bunch of women, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really great. And I appreciate all those women over there rooting for the USA. And although I thought we had that one all the way up until about the last 20 minutes. And then it just kind of fell apart on me. But it was a lot of fun.
You did a great job.
Well, and that's the main thing, really, in golf is I think people have to learn that, you know, you have to have fun. You're not always going to win every tournament or every Solheim Cup, but as long as you have a great experience and have fun along the way, then that just makes golf that much more enjoyable. Just before we let you go, Rosie, we're getting close to the end here. I just would like to ask one final question, just for all the amateurs out there that are obviously struggling with their game a little bit. If you could sort of instill a few pearls of wisdom, a little bit of advice, what would that be? How could we help some of the amateurs?
Well, I think the best thing, we kind of touched upon this a little bit earlier on the show, was, you know, is to be able to, you know, my forte was I knew how to play within myself. I didn't try to hit a shot that I wasn't capable of just because I saw someone else in my group able to do that. You know, stick to your plan, commit to your shot, and feel confident in the shot that you've picked. You can't go backwards and go, well, if I would have done this, I would have done that. I would have been better. I mean, stick to your plan and be confident with your shot and know that you can be able to hit it. And I think when people start to do that, they're going to be better golfers at the end of the day.
And obviously in 2015, they need to go and see the Solheim Cup and get involved with your golf getaway, and that will certainly help their game and have a little bit of fun along the way as well.
Absolutely. Keep watching. Go to Facebook, Rosie Jones Golf, and Twitter. I'm out there on Twitter, trying to get out there a little bit more. But check us out at rosiejones.com and sign up for our newsletter, and we'd love to keep you in touch with what's going on with Rosie Jones.
Well, fantastic. And Rosie, we want to thank you for joining us today. And don't forget to also the Founders movie. For those of you that want to learn more about that and also maybe help with some donations, you can do that as well. And very quickly, again, the website for that, Rosie?
It's thefoundersfilm.com.
Very good. Well, Rosie, thank you very much for joining.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Rosie, I appreciate you being you and allowing me to snoop on you. Because I absolutely admire all that you do and with Carrie and all that you guys are for and what you stand for. So thank you so much, and thanks for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cindy. I really appreciate being on the show, and thanks for inviting me, and it's been great. I'm a big admirer of yours as well. So we'll look forward to seeing you the next time.
All right. Well, thank you again, Rosie, for joining us. We appreciate it. Have a great week, and we hope you'll come back and join us again another time.
I will. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, that was Rosie Jones, of course, joining us here on the Women of Golf. And Cindy, I see we're coming to the end of another program, so I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of the listeners from all around the world for tuning into the Women of Golf. We appreciate you following us each and every week, and you can remember to find us here every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on blogtalkradio.com, and you just go up and type in Women of Golf, and you'll get right here to the show every Tuesday. And if for those of you that missed the live broadcast, if you wait a few moments, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf, and you can pick up the recorded version from there and listen to some great conversation with Cindy, Rosie, and I. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Cindy, thank you. As always, you have a great week, and I will see you back here, right here on the Women of Golf. Have a great week, everybody.